And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
It's lights out and away we ayo. Welcome to No Breaks, an F1 podcast coming to you live from the No Dunks Inc. Classic Factory, proudly part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Whether you're joining us live in the Slipstream team on YouTube or you're listening to the podcast later on, thank you so much for joining us. I am your host and local Ferrari-loving Rube Graydon Gordian. My co-host, Traeger Kirby, is off this week. He caught the first flight from Budapest to the sunny Greek Isles, where he's reportedly lounging on a boat with Fernando Alonso. But as always, team principal JD over on the pit wall making the right strategy call for each stint in this podcast. How are you doing, JD?
I'm doing great, Graydon.
Oh, I'm so glad
to see
here.
You nailed it coming in.
It's the first in all these years, the first time I got to yell the Ayo. I was excited
for it.
It's been like, you know, 15 years coming. Okay. It's hard to replace Trey with his luscious long beard and his bold fashion, but we're going to try our best because we have got not one, but two amazing guests this week. The co-hosts of the Red Flags F1 podcast, Matt Elisafon and Brian Muller. Matt, Brian, how are you guys doing?
Doing good. You know, I'm wearing a Supreme shirt to cut, you know, Supreme Formula One shirt to, you know, bring the fashion.
I love that. I wish Trey was here. He would actually love that. He would be very jealous that you have that. He would be very into that. Yeah. Matt, what about yourself? How you doing?
I'm speechless, actually. This is that whole intro and your office and your microphone. It's just like, this is one giant flex. we can barely get a recording off the ground every single
you
week.
You say it's a
miracle,
flex, but so. You are the guys. Let's just, for those of our listeners who are unfamiliar, which many of you guys are, you are the podcast that Jalopnik called like one of the, like the must listen podcast, like F1 podcasts out there. So I mean I feel like the real flex is you guys taking the time to come on, so I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
They did. Jalopnik did post that, and then a bunch of people were very angry in the comments, being like, "Who are these guys? I don't care about them. Screw these guys. We don't care. You're wrong, Jalopnik." But they're not wrong. They're right. We're the best kept secret in F1.
Okay.
A lot of people gave like the Charles scream at
in Paul Ricard.
Yeah, but it was like they were really scandalized. It was okay. Jesus. It was basically because Brian tackled Elizabeth Blackstock at Jalopnik when
That's
he was
true.
In her offices. He was promoting something, his TV show, and then he was basically like, fuck my TV show. You guys want to hear about my podcast?
Screw
my actual career.
I have a question. Because as a so this is I feel like as an American F1 fan, the number one question I get from like randos or friends or people when they ask me about why the heck do you care about Formula One is like, how did you get into it? You know, for many of them, their answer is like Drive to Survive, right? But I mean, Brian, I'll ask you, Brian, first. Like, what's like your origin story here? Like, what? How did you get into Formula One? Because for a lot of us, for a lot of folks, it's a fairly recent interest. For mine, it's longstanding. So, Brian, where'd that passion come from?
Well, I'm part of the masses. The thing about us is that we're not special. We're one of you. And I was a Drive to Survive, fanboy. But kind of was alone in my fanness because I watched it during the pandemic when I was quarantining at my girlfriend's house with her parents in Houston. And I was like, I needed some alone time. So I found this show, and I've always loved like the docuseries. I've loved you know, Hard Knocks to when they do the thing on HBO where they lead up to the Winter Classic. Like, I've always gotten into those things. And I watched the racing movies like when we were growing. What, that's Sylvester Stallone movie?
Wait, we always talk about this, J.D. What's that one called? What it always comes up. It's bad, supposedly.
It's horrible, but I know that there's some scene in it where there's like this guy, like he's the wily old veteran, and then there's like a Sebastian Vettel type who's like the up and coming guy. I think it's maybe Hayden Christensen, and then they're like he's so good, like he flips a quarter. He stops the car on the track. He flips a quarter onto the track, and they're like, "What's he doing?" They're like, "Check this out!" And he goes and he hits the corner, and the quarter's on the wheel, and it's like this guy can stop on a dime, and it's like that was my experience with racing.
So wait, where's the bad? That sounds incredible. What's the bad part? You know,
I'm waiting for the bad part. Yeah.
Right. I was like, I'm buying that on Amazon.
Purchasing. Not even renting; it's a purchase. Yeah. Matt, what about yourself? Were you also like Drive to Survive as the hook, or did it go before that?
Yeah, I'm like more curious, like because I was listening to your last podcast, and you said you were like, you've been watching for 8-9 years. I'm like, that's the dark ages. You must have been completely alone.
I mean, I was, yeah, big time.
No, I mean, it was Drive to Survive. It was Drive to Survive, and then I Brian and I were famously in a fight. So like, he watched it like 6 months before or something, and then he was like, I would tell Matt about it, but he's an asshole, so I'm not gonna share this with him. I'm just gonna swallow it. And then finally, like, I watch it maybe 6 months later, and then I was like, have you watched this thing called Drive to Survive? And Brian was like, oh, yes. And then we put aside our differences and we started talking, and it was so nice talking about it. And then, you know, I became obsessed with it, and I started, you know, trying to find like podcasts, and it was all these British dry guys who sounded like they knew what they were talking about. And it was like, you know, in the screenwriting, in the movie industry, there's this book by William Goldman called Adventures in the Screen Trade. And like, his whole gist is like, nobody knows anything. Like, the all these Hollywood executives, that they make most of the movies that they put out every year are disasters.
Right.
And it's like the highest paid executives don't know what they're doing because it's such a hard, crazy business. And the more I learned, I was like, oh, nobody knows what they're doing. Now, Ferrari doesn't know what they're doing. Right.
So we're gonna get into that.
I could be a pundit because nobody knows.
Sure. No, yeah. I mean it's actually, people think like I'm some OG because I started watching this stuff in like 2013 or something, as if that somehow makes me like I could just hop up on the pit wall and be a race engineer or something like that, right? Like I don't know. Like, it's pretty, I mean, I would say on the grand scheme of things, still fairly novice. Okay, one thing that also Trey asked me when we first started the show, he made me kind of admit out loud where I was a homer and where I was a hater. So I have a question, which before we get into this, favorite driver or team, least favorite driver? Who's the guy who, like, when he screws up, you're making excuses, and who's the guy who, no matter how well he does, it's like he can't get down with it?
Mine, you know, it happens to be Lando Norris. And I don't know why that happened. I don't know if I'm particularly proud of that fact, but
he's my favorite.
Sorry. My favorite.
He's
my
very
favorite's
likeable.
Lando. I love Lando. I just love that he's so good.
Yeah.
He's just so good. and he's Gen Z, and he's candid, and he's like just within striking distance. Like, I like Lewis and I like Max, but they're already at the top. So I need someone to like root for, but I'm not going to like root for Latifi because then I'm already a Mets fan. It's like, I don't need another, you know, Mets in my life. But not this year. They're going to win the World Series, knock on wood. So, but anyway, yeah. So Lando's my guy. And then my least favorite would probably be Stroll, which is obvious, but it's probably Stroll.
I get, no, those are both fit, those are both fair answers. Yeah, yeah. I mean, those are both, I think one is very likable and one is extremely unlikable. So, yeah.
And I don't really like Vettel either, which we can get into.
I'm excited for that because we are going to talk. We're going to talk about the guy. I also feel like we'll wait for it, but I feel like that's kind of a hot take because I feel like he's going through a moment of a lot of adoration.
Everyone loves him, and we don't get it.
I also don't like Vettel.
We're going to get into that when we get to the recent news about him, but. First, let's get into yet another exciting, thrilling weekend at the Hungarian Grand Prix where all the teams execute at a high level. None of them make any major mistakes, and everyone shows their professionalism. First, let's get into what happened on Saturday, qualifying. Here's the results from qualifying. We saw a surprise pole from George Russell, an incredible lap he put together. Not the quickest in any sector, but putting together like a really quick lap across the board, followed by the two Ferrari boys. Then you had Lando Norris, your guy coming in fourth, a really solid qualifying from him. The two Alpine guys, you know, hopping up above. Lewis Hamilton, Valtteri Bottas, Daniel Ricciardo, and Max Verstappen, and then I believe Perez is down in 11th. The Red Bull guys way out of position compared to their normal finishing. Any big takeaways from this? Were you surprised to see Russell on pole, or did that something that you kind of thought going in, oh, I actually think Merck has the pace for this? I mean, any when you look at that starting grid, anything jump out at you as, I don't know, peculiar, odd, exciting? Anything that had you excited for Sunday?
Well, he tends to do these miracle laps on Saturday occasionally, and so, you know, it's just like I was, and then I was all prepared, ready to be like, okay, how I was ready for him to win because I was just thinking, okay, Ferrari's going to screw up. So George, I think, is going to win. But, you know, I never anticipated what was going to happen, you know, in the future.
Yeah.
I mean, I never anticipated that Verstappen was going to come through. I thought George is going to win and they'll at least keep Verstappen behind. But
I agree. The other thing that jumped out at me on here that I liked, because I feel like part of being an F1 fan is you've got to fall in love with like midfield battles a little bit, was like the two Alpines sandwiched between the two McLarens, not directly, but I feel like that is exciting and fun, and the battle for fourth is going to be fun. At some point in the season, you've got to start to get excited about that stuff, especially I think this might be that point. Where it's like some of the stuff at the top of the table is not the most exciting it was. Okay, but honestly, qualifying was good. The race was a whole nother phenomenon. So let's just get into it. Let's get into what the final standings were on Sunday. Let's take a look at it here. JD, here we go. Max Verstappen in first. I think if you remember from that graphic before, he started in 10th. Then we had Lewis Hamilton and George Russell there. Second, Mercedes' second double podium in a row. Carlos Sainz in fourth. Sergio Perez in fifth. Charles Leclerc down in sixth. How interesting, how exciting. Lando Norris in seventh. Fernando Alonso in eighth. Alpine loyalist Fernando Alonso. Esteban Ocon in ninth. And Brian's beloved Sebastian Vettel down in 10th. So, okay, we'll just go to the – hold on. For this next segment, we're going to – before we talk about Max's, you know, coming back from 10th and everything like that, I want to talk about Ferrari. But I brought some official – I'm a Ferrari fan. I'm a huge Charles Leclerc fan. People know this. I've bought some official Ferrari fan gear to put on.
Why?
Hold on 1 second. I've got my Ferrari.
There we go. That's right.
This is
hell yeah.
This is what I. This is how I feel like week after week, like being
now. Yeah. Now that outfit on, you have to say that it was the car.
We
did nothing wrong. We just did not have the pace today. That is what is the matter.
No regrets, only memories, right?
YOLO. We couldn't have even won the race was the defense from Binotto when they were leading. They were first and second. They were running. How to even begin unpacking?
I mean, where to begin? It's same shit, different day. I mean, it's just And what's interesting about our relationship with Ferrari is that when we came into Formula One, when we first started watching, immediately we were like, we hate Ferrari.
Sure.
Maybe it's because they're like the establishment. They represent, like, we're the, we, you know, the new American fans. We're everything that, like, they're kind of against. If anything, Red Bull kind of represents a little bit of that, like, we're the new guys on the block energy. But, and McLaren's kind of like taken, they're trying to get that American fan.
Yeah,
but we were just like, Ferrari's, Ferrari's Harvard, and we're like state schools. And we're like, screw Ferrari.
See, my Ferrari fandom goes back to, I got into this, we were just coming out of an era of Red Bull dominance, and they were waning. So they had just won four titles in a row, and that felt like the Homer thing to do. But then Mercedes proceeded to rattle off a million titles in a row, and that felt like rooting for the Yankee, coming in and being a Yankees fan a new baseball fan. It was like, I can't do that. That's ridiculous.
Right.
So I was kind of being like, well, I'll root for these Ferrari guys. It's like a classic team, whatever. And then Charles came in, and I was like, oh, this kid seems really talented. And a bit like you with Lando Norris, I was like, I need like a young guy, like a guy who's like, I've been here for his full career to root for.
Right,
so I'm like, so when he was at Alfa Romeo, I was like, I'm going to root for this guy. And that has been a terrible choice. I mean, it's just gone. No, I actually still like him.
No. It's misery.
You chose the right driver. I mean, he's great.
Yeah, he is.
And we love him. I famously got lunch with him through a random connection.
Did
and
you
so
really?
Because I got lunch with him because one of my castmates on my television show is like buddies with someone in his crew, so they've like hung out, and then I pestered him and basically berated him until we all hung out. So we got lunch. And before that, he wasn't really that much on my radar, but after the lunch, I'm like, obviously this is my guy now. So
yeah,
we love Charles, and watching him week after week just slowly be gaslit, abused, neglected.
This is what they do. This is what they do. It's like, it's Felipe Massa, it's Fernando Alonso, it's Sebastian Vettel. It's so many guys who are, you know, supreme talents that just like come out on the other end of this looking like a half-smoked cigarette because they spent some years at Ferrari. I can't even believe this one. I feel like now we're at the place where I don't know if the buck stops with Binotto, like if he's here next year, but you got to clean house, right? You've got to have, maybe that's like the American in me thinking like, oh, the team screws up, you got to fire the coach or something. But like, at least the strategy department's got to get overhauled or something, right? I mean, somebody's head's got a role here. Like,
I mean, we've said it before.
I think it's got to be him.
You think it's got to be him?
I mean, in football, they would be like, okay, so like this year we'll fire the offensive coordinator. Next year we'll fire this guy, and then finally we'll they fire up. But I think it's got to be him. I mean, the culture's, from what I've understood, is Ferrari used to fire everybody and point fingers all the time, and now they've like overcorrected and being like, nobody's at fault. It's a different type of toxicity.
I agree. Yeah, I think the thing used to be like that win now, this sort of like, you know, Knicks-esque is the thing I was compared to. Like every year we've got a springboard right back to being like a title contender or something like that, right? Thing where like they couldn't, but now they're too patient. It's like we're going to build and like every week it's fine. We're just improving. We're iterating. When it's like, no, man, it's go time. Like you've actually probably put the more races than not, you've probably had the fastest car on the track.
They have eight poles. They have eight poles. How many poles does Red Bull have?
I mean, I don't know, but
far fewer poles.
Charles Leclerc.
Matt. Yeah.
Charles Leclerc has more poles, or as many poles now, I think, as many as Max Verstappen. And he's really only been in a competitive car for two of his 4 years at Ferrari. Two of those years, they were bad. Think about how many years Max has been in a good car.
It's true.
It's insane. But think about the races they've thrown away. Like, it's okay. Here's the question then. What is their worst blunder of the season? Is this their worst blunder of the season? Is it Monaco? Is it Silverstone? Is it France? I mean, France is not their blunder. It's Charles's mistake. But it's like, what's the one that they threw away hardest?
I still blame Ferrari for that because they put him in a.
I love that attitude.
He was on tilt, you know. He was on tilt. It was like you know, that they double more, they put a second mortgage on his house, and they're like, you got to win. You got to go to Vegas and win right now. He was like Adam Sandler in Uncut Gems, right? He was like, he's got to win right now, or they're burning his house down.
Okay.
So of course he's going. He's like, okay, I got KG. He's gonna have 20 rebounds, 12. You know what I mean? 20 assists. He's making these crazy bets that, you know, and of course it's not gonna pay off. So I still blame Ferrari for that. And I'm sorry, what was the question?
Oh, it was, Monaco. What was their
Monaco?
What's the big
Monaco?
Thing?
Yeah, it's Monaco. It's Monaco.
Okay. Yeah. Because it's the most important bowl of the season. It's like, how do you not win?
And it's for the soul. I mean, Monaco is where the soul was, because that's Charles's home race. He's had all the bad luck in that race. He never completed an actual race there. Like, every time that he had raced there, something had gone wrong. So there was this like, oh no, what's going to happen to Charles in Monaco? How is he going to mess it up? Because like last year he put it into the wall.
Yeah.
And then his gearbox was broken, so then he couldn't even start the race. So it was like,
and he was on pole. It was this weird, like, he started on pole and then he didn't even start.
If you actually also go back before, like, the first pit stop, it's like Carlos Sainz is in second and he's, like, gumming everybody up. They're, like, stuck behind him. And Charles is, like, driving away. He was, like, 8 seconds in the lead, which should have been more than enough to react to literally whatever Red Bull did. It, like, didn't matter what anybody else did. He had built such a big gap. They should have been in complete control. And they just screwed it up. They just sat there, just like something happened. And they were like, it's like these things happen. And it's like they've never even considered that these very likely possibilities would occur. It's like they're so indecisive. It's insane. Somebody's got to go.
We say it all the time. It's like Ferrari is the only team that will put their drivers on hold.
Yeah.
A driver will, they'll ask them something and they'll be like, give us a minute, and then it's like
a good decision made quickly is better than the great decision made slowly. And like half the stuff that Red Bull does, I honestly feel like it's not even that it's the perfect strategy all the time, although I do think their strategy department is far superior. They're just decisive. They're just like, and we're doing this, and this is what we're doing, so let's go. And it's like, and then they're like, Max, figure it out. That's the call we made. Drive based off of this call. Like,
they do it with their chest, and then Ferrari's like, oh, they seem really confident with that decision. Maybe, and then it gets in their head.
Yeah.
They're like, seems they have like plan Z. Like, they have their like way, they overthink things.
It's incredible.
Last week they did it. I said this on our pod. They did a dummy. They're the worst team in the league in terms of strategy, and they're doing like the NFL equivalent of flea flickers, of running back passes, of it's just like establish the run and make, keep it simple. Why are you doing dummies when you can't even avoid being undercut?
It's like for Mercedes for years, or at least we saw it last year, was kind of like they weren't used to making quick strategy calls, because like they were just so much better than everyone else for so long that they didn't even have to worry about strategy that much. And on some level, that's Ferrari too. Ferrari doesn't have to reinvent the wheel to win these races. They just have to not drop the wheel and break it into a million pieces.
and that's what they do time and time again. Yeah, and it's just like, oh, that guy, you know. And honestly, even in this race, it's like, okay, why did you go there? You knew you were going to need... Everybody was committing to a two-stop strategy. Somebody complained. They were like, oh, and they went back-to-back mediums. They signaled they were doing a two-stop. I was like, that's not my critique. Everybody was doing that. That was very obvious. It's like, but just put him on the softs immediately. Yeah. You know you got to overtake George Russell, so you're putting him on the better tire to do the overtake. And then you'll make the short stop on the far end of that, and you'll go to the end. I actually don't feel like it was that complicated. You know, and maybe Max catches him.
It said what it was on the TV. TV said what to do.
Yeah.
Max and Lewis, like all the guys who did well, they've said they looked at what Pirelli told them to do. And they did it.
And they just said, do the thing. Yeah, it's like, oh, what if we just did the basic thing that everybody thinks is the right thing? And
It's like everyone knows that everyone's been like, they shouldn't have gone on the hards. Like, you know why everyone knows that they shouldn't have gone on the hards? Not because they were on the track analyzing the data. It's because on the television, they were like, yeah, the hards aren't working on this track. I mean, everyone's pretending like they're experts. They're not experts. It's just Martin Brundle within the first 10 minutes of the race is like, oh, no, the hards aren't working today. But apparently... Bonotto didn't get that feed into his ear.
And first of all, this could be Horner just trolling Bonotto, because Horner is truly a par excellence troll. But after the race, he was like, oh yeah, we were going to start on the hards, but then we realized ahead of time that they were going to be a bad tire on Sunday, so we switched to the softs to start the race, which I'm not even sure they were going to do that, but it is a nice pointed thing for him to say after the fact.
Right, too. Yeah. That is a move to, like, you know, when you're far back to strap on something like that and go long.
Yeah, yeah. It probably would have made sense if the hard tires weren't trash. You know, it's mostly what guys do. I was confused when they started on the softs. I was like, so what? They're going to do the shortest stint of anybody of, like, all these top 10 guys and then just be even further back in the pack? I didn't get it. But they did shorter
stints on the mediums. The Ferraris did shorter stints on the mediums than like some guys Perez did on the softs.
Because they weren't in control
Perez
of their
went longer
own destiny.
On his softs.
They just reacted to other people. Other people did things. And to your point, they panicked and said, oh my gosh, should we have been doing that this whole time?
What's interesting, I know we've been talking about Ferrari for a bit, but what's interesting about Ferrari is that there's the culture of Ferrari, which is long-standing that there's issues within the culture of Ferrari. We did an episode on Fangio, and famously, Fangio went to Ferrari and was like, I hate it here. Yeah. He hated how they did things at Ferrari. And he had, like... You know, when I was at Mercedes, or when I was at one of the other my previous team, we did this thing where we had separate pit crews for each car, and Ferrari was like, "Well, we don't do that here. We are Ferrari. At Ferrari, we do it this way." And he was like, "But this is the better way." And they're like, "But it's not the Ferrari way." So Ferrari would rather lose by their criteria then win, but then adapt and win.
There was a guy, who was his name? There was the guy who was the McLaren engineer back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about? Like, he talked about how he went over to Ferrari. It was like insane trying to get them to just adopt like modern like practices about like, you know, interdepartmental collaboration and things like that. It was like impossible to get you to get people to work together.
No, they think they think their shit don't stink. They're like, no, but our car is red, so we
red cars like, aren't we can't best, do anything by definition.
With Michael Schumacher, right? When he comes in, he brings in a international non-Italian. Who comes in? It's like Jean Todt.
Yeah, Jean Todt. Ross Braun's there. Ross Braun.
Yeah. He brings in a German driver. He brings in like this multinational coalition to save Ferrari, and then when that era is kind of over, Ferrari's like, oh, thank God, that's over with, and they fucking get rid of everybody. And they don't. And the guy Nigel, the English guy, that was one of the reasons Spygate happened. Because once Michael left, they were like, let's get rid of all these fucking English guys that have helped us win for all these years. Fuck that. And they've not been good ever since.
Yeah, right. It's
they've been a step behind ever since. And so it goes to the culture of Ferrari.
And even the years where they're a step ahead. Like arguably this year or the year where Lewis Hamilton won with McLaren, where they again another year where they had the best car on track the majority of the year, and Felipe Massa probably should have been the driver's champion. They won the constructors' championship, but Lewis Hamilton nicked him for the driver's title.
They drop it in 18 too with Vettel.
Yeah, they were going. Everybody talks about Mercedes dominance during that period, but going into the summer break, at this point right now, Vettel was in the title lead that year, and they blew it, and everybody forgets like how badly they blew it over the. I mean, by the time the season was over, it's like Mercedes won with a bunch of races to spare. It's like they crushed them from here on out.
Right.
So it wasn't even close. Speaking of crushing Ferrari from here on out. The you know, Max. So Max also has a kind of maybe an equal but opposite day, like a banner day for him coming all the way back from 10th to win the race. I mean, it's silly to say. I'm not even going to ask, is Max going to win the title or something like that? That's an insipid question at this point, I think.
How many hands on the trophy does he have?
Yeah.
One like, hand. I love that. I love that they talk about. Like, is it one hand? Is it two hands?
Yeah. Is that
is
both?
It
yeah.
A finger? Yeah. It's the, yeah.
The real question I want to ask is actually, because I don't even, I mean, unless you have something, I honestly don't even know if I have anything interesting to say about Max's race other than it just was like clean, calm, well executed. And the guy's gonna win the title this year. I'm more interested in the fact that for the second race in a row, Mercedes put two guys on the podium and is now just 30 points behind Ferrari in the constructor standings. Oh. I think the question is Ferrari going to get second in the constructors championship this year?
No.
You say yes. No. Okay, I say yes still, but you say yes. You say, I think yes still, but.
I mean, I'm saying no because I really want Ferrari to get third in the construction championship.
Matt famously like gets predictions. His predictions are always wrong.
Okay.
So he's saying no
except
in
for
hopes
when I
that
said
it happens.
Vettel was retiring.
That's right. When it comes to interpersonal predictions, he's right on point. But when it comes to what's going to happen on the race day, then it's not so good. So we hope that Ferrari gets third. That would be so tasty.
I normally love like chaos and failure. I just don't like when it's happening to my team. So it's like this is like suboptimal in this instance. But we'll see. I still feel like it's as. They're their own worst enemy here. Like, I still think Ferrari will have a better car than Mercedes for the remainder of the year. And if they just drive around like normal F1 people and like don't like come up with increasingly preposterous ways of throwing races, they can absolutely get second. Like, the only thing standing in their way is themselves here, you know.
No, and they can't change themselves. Right? That's not something you can change, right? Who you are. Yeah. I mean, I've been a Giants fan for years, and except for the two Super Bowls that they won, like there's all, like, I mean, this Gettleman era where they drafted David Daniel Jones and they have, you know, and they got Saquon Barkley and they get these shiny, and they're like, we need to surround Daniel Jones with weapons. But then they get the worst coaches. They have no line. And I'm like, they're going to lose. They're always going to lose. And then they're like, you know what Daniel Jones needs? They don't come to the conclusion that he's a bad quarterback. They go, he needs more weapons.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like they're going to lose every time. They're always going to lose. And it's like, I see that and I'm like, unless they just clean house, they're always going to lose. There's something rotten there. Rotten.
You might be right. We'll see. Ferrari weren't the only ones to have a bad day. A couple other kind of notable bad days out there. Not to make this like our most probably negative race recap of the season, but it's like Danny Ric. You know, I think what did he start up in seventh or eighth? He ends outside of the points. Kind of yet again, I think another forgettable weekend for Daniel Ricciardo.
He got that 5-second penalty.
Yeah,
it was his fault that he hit. Lance Stroll, but I've heard that it's kind of stupid to try to make that move on somebody who's got hard tires. It's just come out.
Yeah.
I watched the onboard Lance is coming behind. They both go into the pits together,
right?
And his crew guy, his engineer goes, Daniel's on hard tires. Like send it, and he sent it, he sent it around that corner, and Daniel couldn't turn that tight. So yeah. I mean, it's like there wasn't much Daniel could do.
Yeah, fair enough. I actually don't disagree with that. I think that's fair, but it is starting. I feel like he's running out of excuses here, and at one point,
yeah,
I mean, we know for a fact. Oh, sorry.
That's a rare sympathetic take from us with regards to Daniel Ricciardo. We usually flame him.
Where did Lando qualify?
Where did Lando
fourth.
Qualify?
He was fourth. He was way off Lando.
I mean,
right.
No.
He was way off Lando.
Yeah.
I mean, as he is every week. I mean, it's like a...
Yeah.
We'll get to this later in the show, but like with the Piastri news, there was a bit of a kerfuffle today over where Piastri was going to end up. He is going to end up at Alpine, you know, newsflash to anybody who didn't know that already. But it sounded like the other place that they were considering or they was trying to get him was McLaren, which I think obviously, the worst kept secret in Formula One, McLaren is trying to replace Daniel Ricciardo next year, is now public news, it feels like to me. It's like that he is, I believe he's going to be out of a seat and perhaps out of the series next year. I mean, personally. So
he's going to be there in 2023.
He's going to be there in 2023.
Well, they say that he has a contract. Again, he has a contract, but supposedly McLaren was trying to sign Piastri. Were they trying to sign him for 24? I thought they were like trying to fire Rick and probably pay. They've got to have some out.
They've got to pay him out.
They got to pay him out.
But they were going to do that, or maybe they're going to try to like swap him and then have him go to Alpine, maybe. I heard that floating around too.
Okay, so they weren't just going to like straight up fire him.
They can't fire him. They'd have to pay him out. But the thing is
that's his choice, though, I think.
Here's the problem. If Daniel Ricciardo is not racing on an F1 team, he then can't be in Drive to Survive. That's the problem.
Right. Yeah.
So if you give him all the money in the world, he won't be in Drive to Survive. I mean, when he went on Ellen DeGeneres, he was promoting Drive to Survive. I was like, what is going on? He doesn't even care about racing anymore. No, he seems like he's like, yeah, everybody should watch Drive to Survive. And it's like he doesn't even care. He's like done with winning races at this point.
He seems a little checked out. I think he seems checked out. I mean,
because in GQ, there was a GQ article about him a couple months ago. It's Daniel Ricciardo, the star of F1. And it's like he's trying to like become this famous F1 driver to people in the United States that don't really watch the races.
But that's honestly, it's not a bad strategy in the sense
Great
that
move.
Guys stay in the series because they are connected to a market. And it's like, yo, right. This guy is the hook into this media audience. It's like the Big Ten, you know, adding Rutgers, thinking now that like New Yorkers are going to watch Big Ten football or something, right? But it's like, they're like they do that. And if they get the sense that Daniel Ricciardo is the American guy, that alone will be a reason for McLaren to stay 100% committed to him, because I think you were correctly pointed out earlier that McLaren, I think, wants to be like the most popular team in the United States. I think that's a lot of what the McLaren IndyCar stuff is about and things like that, right? Is like building bridges to like the American audience and being like the top team on this side of the pond.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think that, and that's true. Daniel was kind of the star coming out of it, and he's got the right attitude, and he's like good in front of the camera, and he's charming, and he's all this stuff. And you know, he still has good racecraft. I mean, he pulled over that double overtake during the race, and it was like we ragged him a lot because when he first came in and when he was on top at Red Bull. Not on top, you know, like close to the top at Red Bull. I mean, everything he said was like just so hard, like being this good looking and being this talented and being this awesome. Awesome. Like that was his whole, I mean, you know, and it's like, if you're going to have that thing, if you're going to label yourself that, then when you start falling off, there's going to be guys like us being like, but you said, but still at the same time, he's like our first love. I mean, like he like, you know, the intro to the first episode of Drive to Survive is his voice. And he's like, I'm Daniel Ricciardo. I'm a car mechanic or, you know, whatever. He's making a cheeky joke. And it's like, he's not making cheeky jokes now, but it's like when he did that overtake, it was like, I wish I could quit you. It was like, I still got that flutter of like when you see an old flame and they still look good. But the reality is
him and Günther Steiner are the two heroes of the series.
Yes.
100%.
They're the heroes.
And Günther's having his glow up. I mean, for Günther, that's the real payoff. Because we saw Daniel, he's like right at the top and Günther was at the very bottom. And he's been at the bottom, but all of a sudden now he's starting to rise his way through, and it's like we've
built Jon Snow,
a hero. Yes.
Gunther's the guy. Gunther went from the bastard. You're a bastard. I'm a bastard.
Yeah.
And now he's leading the Wildlings. He's leading Kevin Mag, K-Mag to the promised land.
Yeah. Okay. It's time for something we do every week on No Breaks, which is our No Breaks Full Beans Driver of the Week Award. What can I say? My co-host Drake Kirby loves beans and was over the moon. The first time you heard Martin Brundle use the phrase, he's given it full beans. So, you know, it had to, he thought that was the most wonderful. I think if we could go back in time, he's like upset that the show is not called Full Beans. But it's, anyway, so I'll ask you guys. So for you guys, when you look at Sands, where it finished up, who's your driver of the day? Who's the guy who you think had the best Hungarian Grand Prix? It doesn't have to be the guy who won the race. The guy who won the race this week is a good answer, but it doesn't. You know, it's not always. I mean, it's the driver of the day. We have, you know, we do these things. So,
okay, yeah. I have mine.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, you go, Matt. Go for it.
I just gotta give. I think I'll give it to Lewis.
Yeah, it's a good answer.
You know, a lot of people. It just he gets so much crap for, you know, how well George Russell's doing, and every time George Russell. You know, they got rid of Bottas, as everyone makes me say. They're like, it's you're terrible at pronouncing it. It's Bottas. Yeah. So
it's Bottas. That's what it is. Yeah.
Bottas. Yeah. He is heavy on the ass lately. So, and he just, the way he, you know, he lost this championship in devastating fashion, in the most devastating. He could have gotten his eighth and gotten out of there and just gone on saving the world. But because Max is a dick and F1 is corrupt, he just can't go off into the sunset. And because Mercedes is committed to the future, they brought this hall monitor in who's just right up his ass immediately. And he put it on pole. And every time it's like the camera is always on him. The pressure is always on Lewis. Like, is he? It's extra pressure, but Lewis and George puts it on pole, but Lewis, he keeps his head down. He, you know, he maintains his tires, he maintains his pace, and look at the result that he got. Okay. I mean,
I like that. Brian, you got an answer?
I mean, I think I for Hungary, I think I got to go Max. If Matt's going Lewis, I'm going to go Max. And I think like Hungary was a reminder that like they're still the two best guys. Right. It's still Max and Lewis. Like, they're still 1-2. It was so great to see them on the podium together in that fashion. And, you know, Max, we said it on our pod. It was like, Max, now at this point, just has to just be, like, consistent. He's like, what's the guy's name? Michael? What's his name?
He's Mike Myers.
He's Mike Myers from the Halloween movies. He's just walking steadily with a knife towards the finish line, and Ferrari's just like, all he has to do is just be like, I'm here. Like, you know, just like put like one finger on the dial and everyone else spins out around
him.
He did a full 360 and he still won the race. He still won the race. I mean,
That was just showing off at that point.
They're the teenagers that are just running and tripping and falling and screaming. And he's just knife. Yeah. I'm here with the knife and I'm walking.
I got to agree with it. I mean, those would have been my two choices, but I think I'm going to go Max. I like, as a Leclerc fan, I never give it to Max. I just like, I refuse, you know, but in this instance, it's like, he was killer. I mean, to just sit there and just like,
and why steadily. Do you not like Max?
I mean,
Leclerc are
not.
I get how
like,
Lewis fans hate Max.
Yeah, I definitely get how Lewis fans hate Max. I think I find the whole Red Bull vibe to be a bit like smarmy, and I find Max to be a little joyless. I find Helmut Marko to be not even a dog whistle racist, just like an out and out racist. I find Horner to have like really like kind of, I don't know, like dark, like country gentry Tory energy. And I just think like, it's like all like things that I just like don't vibe with. And I feel like they have great Max. I don't like hate Max. Like Max is, I don't think he's like, he's not like an out and out asshole, you know, or anything like that. And I do appreciate the fact that him and Leclerc have like a very like cordial, like friendly rivalry. Although I also think it's easy for Max to have that. It's very easy for Max to be the one who plays it cool throughout all of this, you know?
Right.
So, you know,
well, through the first few races of the year, we said that every time that you saw Max talking to Charles, he was like, mansplaining to Charles.
Yeah.
He was always like, yeah, I came around the edge there. And it was always like, stop sunning him. But he was just like getting in his head. And Max is like, no, we're all friends. Like off the, like on the, Max's whole ethos is like on the track, anything can happen. And I can put you into a wall and I can do like whatever, but off the track, like, can't we all like, why is everyone being so mean? Like, why do people hate me? And he wants everything to be hunky dory. But the reality is like Max was raised under Jos Verstappen. I mean, he's a killer through and through.
Sure.
And, yeah, he doth protest too much sometimes.
No, there is. It's like, there's a dead end. That's the thing I don't like, is it's the, I called it joyless, but there's like a dead inside quality to all of it, where he is, the Mike Myers analogy is a good one. He is a killer.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, we're going to take a quick commercial break. All of those of you watching live on YouTube, stick around. We'll be back in a few minutes to talk about what has been a very busy, crazy news day in F1 for like a Tuesday in August. So we'll be back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, we are back. Back with Matt and Brian from the Red Flags F1 podcast. Welcome back, guys. Okay, we're going to talk about some of the news that has broken over the last few days. We'll start with the event that kicked it all off. Sebastian Vettel, four-time F1 champion, announced his retirement, which has set off a chain of events that we'll talk about momentarily. But let's talk about Sebastian for a moment. He's kind of a legend of the sport. A multiple time champion, but maybe perhaps not Brian's favorite. Brian, what's the anti Vettel? As we honor his time at F1, why don't you explain to us why you don't like him?
It's interesting. I'll say that Matt converted me, and now I've like taken the ball and really ran with it on my Vettel hate.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I think part of it. I mean, we came into the sport after his glory.
Sure.
So we're newer fans. So we didn't get to see the glory days. And when we came into it, we're like, everyone was raving about this guy Sebastian Vettel and what a good, decent man he is. But it wasn't. It was like, as much as he was a good and decent man, I was like, but where's the base? Is it really reflected on the track? The and yeah. I was finding that not to be the case. Now, granted, he was on not as great teams, but then when we did our deep dive on him, and it was kind of like, oh, when in his glory days, he was like a ruthless asshole.
Yeah, he had the stuff back in the day for sure. He had the stuff.
And he was cocky, and he did the number one thing, and people hated him, and he was like flexing all day on like, I'm the best, I'm the hottest thing in Formula One. And now he's like talking about the bees, and I'm like, what about this guy? I miss this guy. Where's the killer? Because all I see is the humanitarian, and I don't watch Formula One for the humanitarianism, okay?
I watch Formula One for the killer.
But you can be a humanitarian and win. Like Lewis has human rights issues that he's concerned about, and he wins. And I also think it's kind of a thing that we do is we kind of see ourselves consciously or unconsciously as market correctors. Like if a driver gets too much love, then we immediately have to start hating them.
Sure.
And if a driver gets too much hate, then we sort of ease off.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like that's just a thing that we do. So Vettel, I'm like, I'm suspicious. Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay, I get it.
You know what I'm saying?
He I do.
That,
like
that Red Bull car was incredible. Well, let's go through it, right? You know this better than I do, but that Red Bull car was unbeatable.
Unbeatable.
Right? So all you had to.
Well.
And then what happened, right?
There were some Ferrari cars in there that were also very good, but they didn't end up with.
Well,
the,
because they're Ferrari. Because they're Ferrari.
Yeah.
Also, you talk about Red Bull being a toxic environment. It's not positive vibes at your favorite team, Ferrari, but we'll leave that aside.
Yeah.
See what I do? You go after Red Bull. I try to market correct a little bit.
Yeah.
But that Red Bull car was incredible. What happens? Daniel Ricciardo comes in.
Yeah.
Daniel Ricciardo, he's kind of like this like tragic Leighton Hewitt figure where he like came along in the wrong time. But if he came around a few years earlier, maybe he would have been world champion. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He starts beating Vettel. What does Vettel do? He runs to Ferrari. Of course, that's a horrible decision. You should never go to Ferrari. But that car, and we know now that maybe those drop balls were probably maybe not his fault after we see what's happening to Charles, but Charles beat him.
Charles
he's had a really tarnished legacy after those four.
He's still young.
He's only 35. He's like younger than I am, which actually was really upsetting to me when I realized he was younger than I am.
Right.
Because I feel like
if we're doing like a draft of like the guy, so it's like maybe Lewis first, maybe Max, but it's like I would take a lot. Like if we do Alonso's career like five times, I think it's Alonso that should have four. And Vettel that maybe should
Alonso has something. There is, I said it once on the show, but there is something crazy. Like Alonso is like, he's a grand, he's eight championship points over three seasons away from being a five-time world champion or something like that. It's like some insane stat where he's just like, just breathtakingly close.
And you know who found that stat?
Somebody we consider the all-time
Alonso.
Great. Yeah,
right. Alonso reminds people of that stat.
Yeah.
Alonso is a fucking legend. I love it. See, I just – anything that smacks to us as performative, like Vettel picking up the it's like him riding the scooter. It's just
okay,
like
but the one performative thing he did that I loved was the swapping of the places. But that had a cocky energy to it.
That an assholery to it.
Yeah,
yeah,
so
we love that.
That
kind of thing we love and we gravitate towards. And that's a Fernando Alonso move.
Yeah,
and then maybe it was a Sebastian Vettel of old move. Yeah. But like we there's like the elder statesman of now Formula One, which is Alonso and Vettel, and like we're much more of like an Alonso guy.
Also, you know why Sebastian Vettel left the meeting a couple weeks ago?
No,
remember when he stormed out?
Yeah,
of the meeting?
I do remember that.
He got fined. I found out why he did that, which is it's a great. He stormed out of the meeting because Alonso, for like the fourth week in a row, was ranting about he had a prepared speech of why his time penalty in Canada was wrong. And I was just like, and he just couldn't listen to Alonso just bitch and moan about his time penalty again. He's like, I cannot listen to that. I hate him so much. And I'm like, wow, it actually made me love both of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Like this guy's like, I'm not getting any younger. I can't listen to this shit. And this guy's like, I'm 41 years old. I'm not going to change. I care. I'm going to fucking litigate this. I will never change. I've learned nothing from my days at McLaren or Ferrari.
Okay, that's our homage to Sebastian Vettel, right?
That's our
there.
Honoring.
That's as we send him off.
Good luck on your next
travel, Vettel.
That's our like.
No, I mean I support him being. I support him supporting climate change.
Yeah, it's good that stuff. He does that. Yeah,
but sometimes even like Lewis for this Black Lives Matter stuff is really great. But like you know when the stuff with like sometimes they're very vague. These guys that they speak in these vagaries, these positive, like oh the climate's getting too hot. Like we should do better, guys.
Yeah,
like,
I find that this is not the same. But like their whole. What it's not re-races run, but whatever they're doing right now, whatever that campaign is to counter like the bullying or like the
you know, whatever was said at the Austrian Grand Prix by fans, I find to be Stefano Domenicali's interview on that before the Hungarian Grand Prix, where they were like, so what are you guys doing to take on, like, you know, harassment and like aggressive actions by fans? And he was like, oh, we're going to be very strong on this, was what he said. They were like, is what he said. And they were like, and then another guy asked him, he was like, so what specifically are the plans? And he was like, We are going to take this very seriously. It's just great. It was like this is nothing. These are nothing statements. Right. This is nothing. So I am empathetic.
A lot of lip service in F1, yeah. And you know, and like when Boris Johnson stepped down, like Lewis, what did Lewis say? He said, you know, our world leaders, they got to do better. They're failing our people. It's a nothing state. Right? And Lewis is one of the bar is really low. I mean, we said this in our last podcast. LeBron James was like, you know, he was like, Donald Trump is a bum. He just said it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There was not, like, he got real specific. So, you know, well, Sebastian Vettel says, you know, the climate's heating up. He's got a Aramco all over his car.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's actually specific evildoers that he could call out, and he's not. So, whatever.
Well, we'll see. Okay. Well, we'll see what he does. It seems like he doesn't know what he's going to do next. I've seen no intimation of where he's going from here.
I don't know. So, that his retirement announcement seemed pretty organized. Yeah. It was black and white on Instagram. It was like true. An A24 movie. I was like, is this a trailer? What is this, the trailer?
It was.
I like blueberries.
I like blueberries. I saw it on Instagram, but I was like,
and four leaf clovers. is this in the Writers Guild? Is this a union production that's happening?
This is gonna get a freaking Spirit Award. Jesus.
Okay. Well, let's move on then to the guy who we've really mostly praised during the segment, which is Fernando Alonso,
the Prince of Darkness.
Alonso.
He has executed El Plan once again and made a move from Alpine to Aston Martin, a move that a mere like 48 hours something that a mere 48 hours ago, like with some buddies, I was like just almost yelling at how that was never happened. They asked me and I was like, that's so stupid. Of course he's not doing that. These rumors are idiotic. Like, why in the living hell would he ever do that? And then like a day later, he did it. Yeah, he did it. So it's like, yeah. I don't. I mean, so first, I mean, tell me that. What? I don't get it. I don't get it. Like, Alpine is much better than Aston Martin. Alpine is knocking on the door of – they're not seriously battling for the top three, but, like, they are the top of the midfield. And anyway, the top of the midfield, you know, in theory is one or two smart moves away from a couple seasons, you know, being – you know, up in the mix or something. Yeah. At least fighting for podiums more regularly. Aston Martin is in the dregs. They are in the gutter right now. It has just been What is this move? Is it just because it's like I need to be I want to be the main man and I'll be it here?
I thought about this a lot. I did the full cycle of it. First, I was enraged. First, I've probably fully because I'm a huge Alonso fan. I'm probably in full denial right now. So, like, let me caveat with that. I'm completely in denial, probably.
Yeah.
But I love this move.
Okay.
Fernando.
Well, okay.
So I went from hating this move. Yeah. I went from the rational person like you.
Okay. So how did you get about it?
First of all, let me just say, Alpine is a clown show. They signed Esteban Ocon to like on a million year deal. He sucks. He's so mid. He's got no personality. Alonso, he's lost to pretty much every teammate he's ever had. Okay. So on that side of the paddock, they locked themselves into that seat, which is stupid. I just can't get through an app. And he's so lucky. I mean, he basically saved Alonso's Ocon's life by leaving. I mean, nobody's more relieved than Ocon that he's gone. But what I was going to say is, I mean, they were only offering him a 1 year deal. So he didn't want to stay there for one more year. He wants to be in the game for longer. And he looked at, you know, Aston Martin, and he saw they were going to, they're offering him a 2+1. So 3 years.
Potentially. Yeah. I mean, so, I mean, definitely is a longer deal for sure.
From that point of view, that's a no brainer. Secondly, they're building a new factory, which I'm now real. I was skeptical.
Now you're very
really
invested in the Aston Martin. Now you're like, the Aston Martin new factory is going to be way they brought state in, of the art. They, wait you till you
they,
see
state
this,
of
guys.
The art. They brought in a. They brought in the next car is going to be designed by a very senior guy at Red Bull, so it's going to have a lot of Red Bull fingerprints on it. And I want to say this: I had my doubts about Lawrence Stroll when they brought in Vettel, because Vettel was already a diminished asset. I thought when they brought him in, he was already losing
to Leclerc.
Leclerc. Yeah. So he was a distressed asset where he would look, where Stroll would look good against him. When you're bringing in, when you're bringing in Alonso to me, you're telling me you want to win, and you're like, okay, Stroll, you had a guy that you would look good against. Now we're bringing in a psycho. And it's, and what's going to happen is going to happen, because the reason I couldn't get behind Aston Martin was because it's like, why am I going to root for a team that doesn't really put winning first?
Just
like,
think about the things that Fernando Alonso is going to say to Lance Stroll, like the just the soul crushing comments he'll make after
his
races.
Favorite driver growing up was Fernando Alonso.
I know. And there's our cue. We've got this together.
Like, look at that little Jewish boy.
My handsome baby boy here, and his hero.
He's gonna be a baby boy again. Let me tell you.
Yeah, he's. Yeah, I mean, this is back Lance Stroll's Ferrari driver academy days. Talk about something that Lawrence must have paid a lot for, I feel like, to get. But there, yeah. So he's definitely. I mean, if Fernando was beating Ocon week in week out, he's gonna roast Stroll. I feel like
right. And
he's
that's
gonna roast Stroll,
Stroll
being yeah. Yeah, but I also think I'm like if Stroll has that level of respect for him, I think that, like, it's interesting about Lawrence Stroll Lance Stroll is that, like, he's had little moments of greatness, but I think that he is, like, at the end of the day, like, the upbringing, the vibe, I don't know how much respect he's going to, like, dole out, but maybe he, like, sit behind Fernando Alonso for a couple of years, learn a thing or two, and maybe they could be a force to be reckoned with. I also want to say
he'd be a good number two. He'll be a good number two.
I have some breaking news here.
What happened?
Breaking news. Oscar Piastri has just released a tweet, because it came out that Oscar Piastri is going to Alpine.
Yeah, we were. Right. Yeah.
Well, Oscar Piastri just tweeted 5 minutes ago. I understand that without my agreement, Alpine F1 have put out a press release late this afternoon that I am driving for them next year. This is wrong, and I have not signed a contract with Alpine for 2023. I will not be driving for Alpine next year.
What? Wow, that is that is some good breaking news on the bot. I just presume. Wow. I mean, in that case, he's probably not. I gotta presume he's just. They're not going to just let him go to McLaren. I mean, where is he going to drive for?
Well, also the other piece of news is that isn't Fernando Alonso on a yacht right now in fucking in Greece and they can't get a hold of him, and that Alpine found out this news that he was going to Aston Martin
from
the press release.
Yeah, that's how
Otmar is trying to call Alonso and it's going straight.
You know, Otmar a lot. I feel like
it's going straight to voicemail.
This is a total mess. This is a gong show. But I love.
Is he definitely going somewhere else?
Well, how can he? He's under This is like he can't just walk. Like, to your point about McLaren and Mike claiming they're going to get rid of him, it's like, I think McLaren theoretically could get rid of Ricciardo in the sense that they could pay him a fortune to make him go away. But I don't think Piastri can be like, no, I'm just not doing it. Like, I think his options are not.
So he's just going to sit on the sidelines another year?
I guess. Because you're what? Because you're that mad at Otmar Szafnauer for saying you're going to drive for them next year? Like, what? Why would you do that? That's not a good call, in my opinion. There's only 20 seats in the goddamn. And he already said he didn't want to drive for Williams. I thought that was my understanding of the whole Piastri to McLaren thing is that they were going to, when they thought, Alpine thought they were going to have Alonso next year. Obviously, they thought that just a day or two ago. Otmar was saying he was very confident he was staying. staying, and they were going to try to get Piastri in a seat at Williams, because likely one, if not both of those seats were potentially going to open up, because there's been rumors that Albon might move on as well somewhere else. I don't know about that, but we'll see. But at least Latifi's seat is likely going to be available, and they were going to slot him in there. And supposedly he said, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be a back marker. I'm going to try to get a seat at McLaren. And McLaren was down to talk, you know, which obviously they're not considering replacing Lando in that instance. You know, it was only one guy we're talking about them replacing in that instance. So I don't know exactly how that would have worked contractually. So I don't know. So he's
well, no. Well, what I think could have happened we're not aware of this, but what we think might have happened, what could have happened, and this is what the delay was, and this is what people were speculating in the delay, right? Because when Fernando left them with their dick in their hands, Fernando is such an iconic move going to Aston Martin. I love this. See, I'm loving this move more and more every day.
The 180 you pulled on this. I think this is such a dumb move. He could have gotten another year after that. They would keep him around. Basically.
No, they wanted him. They listen. The disrespect. They were treating this legend, this living legend, like a seat warmer for this little Australian kid, and he wasn't having it.
So
basically, Otmar Szafnauer thinks he's this genius because he's a nerd and he could build. No, it wasn't even Otmar; it was the other guy. But basically, what might have happened is they were like, okay, so we're going to keep, because Fernando is not going anywhere. Disrespect. We're going to let you negotiate. We're going to let you go somewhere else for a year. So we're going to let you start. We're going to let you open the marriage up. Right?
Yeah, but were they?
Okay, go ahead. And he talked to Williams and he talked to McLaren maybe. And maybe they hammered something out. And now they're trying to close the marriage up again. And Oscar Piastri's like, no.
Yeah, I mean, he's clearly like, no. I mean, presuming Brian didn't just make up that tweet, you know, I think
this is true.
But this is stupid because I would rather
some men just want to see the world burn.
Yeah,
I'd rather drive for if I'm Oscar Piastri, I'd rather drive for Alpine than McLaren. It's doing better, and I don't have to go up against Lando Norris.
And I've been in the drivers' academy, and I'd rather go up against Esteban Ocon all day
Ocon
long
than Lando. Yeah,
than Lando Norris. Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Let's take a look at the driver's lineup for next season real fast. A moment ago, I was about to say this is already inaccurate because it should be Oscar Piastri there, but it is back. It is now reverted back to being accurate.
what a shit show!
Over the course of the show, it's evolved. This graphic's evolved a few times, and I guess. I don't know. I was going to say who ends up in these various spots. We don't know. I feel like Zhou Guan Yu is going to stay. I feel like he's done a nice job.
Oh, yeah.
And they just haven't figured that out yet. I actually feel like that. I don't know. The Alpine situation seems very fluid. I don't know what's going to happen with Mick. I know they haven't signed a deal, but it doesn't. I feel like Ferrari with all their loyalty to the Schumachers, are going to throw their weight around and make Haas stick with them for another year. That's what I feel like. But I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, probably. I would think that they would do that.
So
yeah.
Who does Alpine get for this seat if not Oscar Piastri? Like, I genuinely don't know. Alex Albon?
You think Alex Albon's leaving Williams?
There had been... I had heard some rumors that, like, he was shopping around and being like, how do I get into a more competitive seat again? Like, how do I get back out of this? And it's like, now I think it's a good question is, does somebody want Alex Albon if you're putting your, you know, are you like, why are you just keeping Alex Albon warm for Red Bull in case they need him in a pinch or something like that, or, you know, whatever, you know, I don't know. So it's, I don't know, but maybe he stays. It seems like most likely that he'd just stay. It seems like the simplest, like most likely outcome.
If Pierre wasn't crapping the bed, I would say Alpine would try to get him out of his contract at AlphaTauri.
Yeah,
right.
Snap him up.
Get two French drivers.
Get two French drivers for Alpine. That would make the most sense to me. I think it's probably possible to buy him out.
It's probably possible, and Red Bull seems pretty.
They want to dump him. They want to keep him just happy enough, but they're not really putting their weight.
No, I don't think he's. I think honestly, it's probably the smart move for Gasly if he can figure.
But where
that
is
out.
Piastri driving? This is all.
Yeah, like where is he going?
I mean, he just said no to a perfectly good seat.
So Mark Webber's his manager, which I didn't know was the case, which is suspect. Yeah. I don't know if I really trust Mark Webber for that
Why?
Kind of thing. Because he's I don't know. I'm just like, this multi-21. I mean, this guy.
Well,
this
isn't it funny that Seb opened his whole life up for him now? That it was Sebastian Vettel that did him one turn or.
But then I guess what I was hearing was that he had this like preliminary potential deal with McLaren.
Yeah.
And that there's a McLaren option for this whole thing, which in which case it raises the question for me of like, does McLaren do a little swap where they get Piastri
yes.
and then Danny Ric goes to Alpine.
Or just like
I don't think.
But if you're
Piastri would have to be insane to say this without knowing he has a seat.
But also, if you're Alpine and you're in a dogfight with McLaren and you presumably are there again next year, they're your main rival the way the grid shakes out at this time. Why are you thinking, oh yeah, let's just swap our rising superstar or like potential? I know Piastri's not a superstar yet, but like our F2 champ and like guy who could be cream of the crop F1 driver for your like, you know, winter of his career, far second best guy. Like, why do you do that? Like, why? What is the logic for you there to play ball with them?
Because they were keeping Piastri in the friend zone for what they thought was one more year, and that might have pissed him off.
But why do you take back Ricciardo? Like, why do you even do the swap? Like, why?
Because it wouldn't make sense for Alpine. It wouldn't really make sense for Alpine.
Yeah.
No, I think there is something in his clause. And because here's the problem is that Alpine doesn't supply any engines, so they don't really have the same relationships to place people.
Right.
But I think there's something like. It's like these driver programs, it's part of the thing. It's like, okay, if you can't get a seat with us, we're going to try to place you. That's part of the deal.
Yeah, for sure.
To make a good faith effort. They have to make a good faith effort to get him a seat.
But at some point, like,
part of that good faith effort.
But at some part, making a, like, that's, it's, I can't think of a good analogy for it, but it's definitely like, there's a cutoff for your nose to spite your face thing to like make a good faith effort to place a young driver somewhere, but for that you have to take back an old driver on the decline. You know, when you're
if Mark Webber talks to Zach Brown and Zach Brown says he's interested and then Alpine spikes it, that's gonna poison your relationship.
Oh yeah.
It's like
it's
you're
done.
Not giving
I mean
me
it may
seat.
Be it may
you're
be
not giving me
done.
A seat. So you're hiring this old guy for another year. So
but,
you're going to tell me that you're going to keep me in the friend
him a
zone?
Seat. Well, they were like 30 minutes ago. What? They were, and then I don't know what they are doing right now.
No, they're all. But the thing is, they're only giving him a seat because Alonso wouldn't agree to a 1-year deal.
Alonso made a brilliant move in going to Aston Martin. Yeah. To your point,
Just 4D chess. I'm telling you, he's going to be a world champion.
Who's the Adam Schefter of F1? Is it Martin? Is it Will Buxton? Because I'm like, actually rely on for these trade? You know, it's like, who's the Woj? Who's the
some
F1 Woj?
Just shot themselves.
I actually
like,
don't.
Who's the F1 Woj?
I
need
it's
Woj
not Will
bombs.
Buxton because
who's dropping
Buxton's,
the Woj bombs?
Buxton's
I need,
too
we
much
need
like
Woj
a,
bombs. I was talking out of their ass. No one knows shit.
Buxton's like in the Buxton's too much like part of the family. I mean, he's only saying what F1 wants him to say. He's not gonna
right.
like
we
blow something up.
We need a little gremlin that's got two blackberries.
Yeah.
Who's that guy?
I don't know.
I want to be that guy.
You can't. I mean, it's
who's just like talk to me, Fernando.
he's not picking up Otmar Szafnauer's calls, but he's picking up yours on his Greek boat.
Booby, I got Gunter on the line. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
He was like, Fernando's like, I'm signing with Aston Martin. And then he throws his phone in the water. That's what Kimi did. He literally
Kimi
signed
Kimi
a con-
style.
He signed with a Ferrari, I think, and he threw his phone in the ocean.
He was my first love when I first joined. He was my original favorite driver.
Yeah,
he was my because I was like, this guy's great. This guy's totally great. Okay, last piece of news here, probably not on the scale of this, but it also broke today. A little side note in F1 land is that Lewis Hamilton has bought a stake in the Denver Broncos as part of the Walton family, you know, the Walton heirs, you know, takeover attempt. He joins a couple other notable members of this investment committee. Condoleezza Rice as well, I think, is also in this investment group or whatever. But they're buying the Denver Broncos. My favorite piece, I was reading just one little thing about this. I was reading like some British article on him doing this. And they were talking about the Waltons and a few other members. I think it's like the Penners or something. I forget. But a few other members of this investment group. And they were like, well, Lewis Hamilton owns a home in the Colorado Mountains, as do many other members of the Denver Broncos investment group. As if that was like a little tidbit or detail, like they bump into each other at like the Telluride Albertsons or something. And like that's how this all came to be. As if like they all own homes in Colorado. And that's why they all got together to do this. I just thought it was a very funny British detail for a British person to include, as if that is at all relevant to Lewis.
No, he has homes probably in other places as well.
Yeah, he has like 30 homes, I'm sure.
He's though got I'm home, also got, like, I'm like it does evoke like the like evil cartoon drawing of like what rich people talk about at parties.
Yeah.
They're like at a party and they're like, are you a Broncos fan? Yes, I am. I don't like how they've been doing things recently. We should buy them, shan't we? And Lewis is like, yeah, man. Yeah, you should do that. I'll
pop in
there.
He's teaming up with the Waltons, like one of the most evil, like rich.
Although
Waltons used to be evil and now like they're the mom and pop shop and it's Amazon.
Oh, yeah, sure. You think Waltons are the weird rebels against the evil empire. Yeah, that's how I think of
it. It's like how Barnes & Noble used to be like evil, and now it's like, oh, cute. It's a Barnes & Noble. Okay. How quaint.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if this, you know, if the Broncos can, I don't know, can capture a little bit
we
of the championship
magic. We can't leave this stream until we know where Oscar's going. We just stuck
here. Sit here for like...
Brian just has to keep refreshing Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, have we any updates on that? No, I can't imagine so. Okay, in the meantime, let's take a look at the standings here. Some heartbreaking standings for me. But we've got Max Verstappen out in first with 258 points, followed by Charles Leclerc in second, just a mere 5 points ahead of Perez in third, followed by George Russell, Carlos Sainz, and Lewis Hamilton, pretty much the top three teams in the league, fairly solidified at this point, as you can also see on the team standings side. Then there's your boy Lando Norris, Esteban Ocon, Valtteri Bottas, and then Fernando Alonso. You guys were doing a lot of Ocon hate, even though he's 17 points ahead
He got lucky. He's been lucky this year. Please. He's been so lucky.
No, he has.
So lucky.
It's actually, I think it's more that Alonso has gotten unlucky. Like the Grim ones have really attacked his car. It's like a lot.
He's had four like DNFs.
And they've all been things that aren't his fault. Yeah.
Right.
He has gotten really unlucky. He has gotten
I mean, why are you trying to provoke me? I don't know. You're having a nice time.
Okay. We'll obviously. And I guess we'll just settle back and grab a drink and wait for more Oscar Piastri. I think that's our show for today, gentlemen. Guys, thanks so much for having me on. Tell us a little bit where can we find you guys when you're not refreshing Twitter constantly trying to figure out what's next in Oscar Piastri's life. Like where can we find you guys?
You can follow us on twitter.com at the red flags F1, and you can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at the red flags pod. And and then we release our episodes every Monday, usually around 7 a.m. Eastern is when our episodes drop. So we do weekly episodes and we do race recaps and we do off week episodes. We do interviews. We have Mario Andretti on the pod. We had Blake, who is a former engineer at Red Bull, on the pod, if you want to get some of that. So yeah, we're doing this thing weekly, and then
love it.
Yeah, and then so come follow the red flags,
Brian. We can also find, and then Matt's for social. Matt's off the grid. He like goes into like
don't
some
worry
sort
about
of,
it.
Like,
don't worry about.
Don't even try.
Don't worry about that picture. I want to show you a picture of Fernando Alonso. He posted this at the same time that Oscar posted this.
He's chilling.
Just chilling.
That is
chilling.
That is some legendary stuff. Okay, but Brian, we can also find you somewhere else. Tell us a little bit where we can watch what you're up to.
I'm an actor, and I'm on a television show called Bridge and Tunnel. It's on Epix. That's EPIX, not FX. It's Epix, and it's airing right now. So the fourth episode came out on Sunday, and we got two more episodes left this season. So you can go watch that, get a little free week trial, and watch the first two seasons on season two. And you can follow me on Instagram at bmulls 327, BMULLS 327.
Classic, the 327. I like that in there. Okay, you heard that, guys. Follow, subscribe, listen, watch the Red Flags F1 podcast. Check out Bridge and Tunnel on Epix, not FX. You can follow me at Mr. Gordian. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram, all those places. Although I really don't blast grams. Don't follow me there. It's like pictures of my kids every 6 months. And then follow us. No Breaks. We're on Spotify. We're on Apple Podcast. We're on YouTube. So are these guys. You can find them in all the same spots. And follow No Dunks. Follow us online. We'll be here. It is the summer break now, but we're going to have some episodes. We're going to have some more guests on. We're going to do some fun stuff. So we'll be around each week doing some stuff, even though the drivers are taking a break. Fernando's, chilling on a boat in the Greek Isles. We'll be here hard at work, keeping you updated week over week on what's happening with Oscar Piastri. Where is he at this exact moment? What's he having for lunch? And where is he going to drive next year? We don't know. That's our show. JD, you got anything? You got anything else for me?
No, that's it. You can check out Pop and Pax as well. We recorded a show with Lee Ellis and Kelly Dwyer. They opened three packs of cards, and it was awesome. That's on the No Dunks.
Talk about an NBA blog OG. Kelly Dwyer, legend. A legend.
A legend. Exactly.
Yeah. All right. I've always wanted to say this. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks, folks. Remember, be faster, be last.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.